is the pendulum currently with corticosteroids in sepsis?
Sepsis is a dysregulated post-response.
A continuous infusion of hydrocortisone did not lower 90-day mortality.
There's not a lot we can do for sepsis.
Why does it remain so controversial?
There's a lot of variation in clinical practice.
Welcome back to Critical Care Perspectives in Emergency Medicine. Mike Winters here from the University of Maryland School of Medicine in Baltimore, Maryland. And welcome to this month's podcast. And this month, we're going to cover a very controversial topic. Actually, turns out to be quite a controversial topic over the last 30 to 40 years. And that is steroids in the use of patients with severe sepsis, more so septic shock, based on two large randomized controlled trials that were just published in the last 3 to 4 months in the New England Journal of Medicine. We're going to tackle those two articles, a meta-analysis that was just published, EPUB ahead of print online in Critical Care Medicine, and provide you with our thoughts on where are we at or where is the pendulum currently with corticosteroids in sepsis. But without further ado, let me bring in my stellar co-host here, Dr. Peter W., Dr. Rob Rodriguez, and Dr. John Greenwood. Gentlemen, how are you this month?
Doing great, Mike. Just a little hot in New Orleans.
Doing very well. Doing very well out here, although lamenting the end of summer.
Things are going well up here in the Northeast. I can't complain. I'm just coming off a week of vacation, so I'm feeling pretty good.
Outstanding. Yeah, Rob, I have to echo your thoughts there. Coming to the end of summer, it's always a little bit bittersweet. I have fairly young kids, so it's a return to school for them. And I always enjoy hanging out and family vacations during the summer, but I won't be too sad to miss the heat, Peter. We're a little hot up here and humid here in Baltimore, and it's just that time of year when it's 95 to 100 degrees Fahrenheit and almost 100% humidity is walking into the hospital. You got to hurry or else you're going to start sweating in the short walk from the parking garage. Well, gentlemen, let's tackle our clinical topic for this month, talk about steroids in sepsis. And John, why don't you get us started here with a little bit of background? Why are we talking about this? Why does it remain so controversial?
Absolutely, Mike. So this is a fairly controversial topic. And I have to admit, over the course of residency as well as fellowship, I was brought up in a time in which steroids were always part of the recommendations, particularly with surviving sepsis. And to be honest, this is maybe one of the most controversial topics, particularly one that has maybe the pendulum is swinging in the other direction over the course of my early career. So I think it all starts out with experimental and clinical evidence that suggests basically sepsis is a dysregulated post-response. And that includes lots of things that include the hypothalamic pituitary adrenal axis or the HPA axis and may involve steps from cortisol production and cortisol use by cells. So in some cases, patients with sepsis may have a hyperinflammatory state. And steroids have been used as an adjunct therapy in septic shock for a long time, for almost 40 years or so. But there's still a lot of uncertainty that remains about the safety and even whether or not it's an efficacious therapy. In the 1980s, there were a few RCTs demonstrating harm, particularly with high-dose methylprednisolone, and two RCTs examining low-dose hydrocortisone. And I think this was two of the RCTs in particular that drove a lot of the recommendations within the past 10 years, but they had some conflicting results on mortality among patients with septic shock. And then certainly there's some newer studies, which we're going to talk about today. Current clinical practice guidelines recommend the use of hydrocortisone in patients with septic shock, as long as there's been adequate fluid resuscitation and vasopressors have not restored hemodynamic stability. Now, recommendations are generally weak and based on a low quality of evidence, particularly in the guidelines. And to be honest, there's a lot of variation in clinical practice. People have looked at this in broader perspectives and found that 33% of clinicians believe steroids improve survival in septic shock. Another third believe they do not, and there's the other third which remain unsure. So there's a lot of controversy about whether or not we should be using steroids in treating our patients with severe infections, particularly with sepsis and septic shock.
Outstanding beginning, John. Now, as you mentioned, in terms of the current guidelines for recommendations for corticosteroids in patients with septic shock, it's really based on weak evidence. And over the last 3 to 4 months, there has been a lot of discussion, articles published, blog posts written, podcasts discussed and recorded on two large randomized controlled trials regarding corticosteroid therapy and sepsis in 2018. Peter, take us through the first one, the adrenal trial by Venkatesh and colleagues.
Sure. So this is published again, as Mike said, in New England Journal. The objective was to really test the hypothesis that hydrocortisone results in a lowered mortality than when compared to placebo among patients with septic shock. The study was investigator-initiated, an international study, pragmatic, double-blinded, a parallel group, randomized control trial. It took place in Australia, the UK, New Zealand, Saudi Arabia, and Denmark. The patients themselves included adults greater than the age of 18. They were on mechanical ventilation, all of them. They had documented or a strong suspicion of infection. They had two or more of the SIRS criteria, and they were treated with vasopressors or inotropic agents for at least 4 hours. Some of the exclusion criteria is important to look at, and they excluded those who received treatment with systemic steroids for an indication other than septic shock. They excluded anybody who received etomidate during RSI purposes. They excluded those who were considered likely to die from a pre-existing disease within 90 days after randomization. And then they excluded those who met all inclusion criteria for more than 24 hours. So from a randomized standpoint, IV infusion of hydrocortisone at a dose of 200 milligrams per day, so these continuous drips, and then compared to placebo, they were administered over a period of 24 hours for a maximum of 7 days or until they were discharged from the ICU or death. Patients, treating clinicians, trial personnel were unaware of the trial group assignments and the sequencing. So cutting to the outcomes. Primary outcome was 90-day mortality. So who was alive at the end of 90 days? Secondary outcomes, and there's a boatload here, 28-day mortality, time to the resolution of shock, the recurrence of shock, the length of ICU stay, the length of hospital stay, the frequency and duration of mechanical ventilation, the frequency and duration of renal replacement therapy, the incidence of a new bacteremia or fungemia between 2 and 14 days, and the receipt of blood transfusions. So let's cut to the results. 3,800 patients were enrolled in 69 medical surgical ICUs. 1,898 were assigned to the hydrocortisone group. 1,902 were assigned to placebo. Ultimately, 3,658 were included in the study, 1,832 in the hydrocortisone group, 1,825 in the placebo group. The characteristics of patients were similar in the two groups. So let's get to the primary outcome. 90-day mortality, 27.9% in the hydrocortisone group and 28.8% in the placebo group. So really no difference based on the admission type, medicine versus surgical ICUs, the dose of catecholamine infusion, the primary site of sepsis, gender, Apache 2 scores, and the duration of shock. Let's look at the secondary outcomes. No difference in 28-day mortality. The time to resolution of shock was shorter in the hydrocortisone treated group. The time to ICU discharge was shorter again in the hydrocortisone treated group. Shorter duration of the initial episode of mechanical ventilation in the hydrocortisone group, and fewer patients in the hydrocortisone group received a blood transfusion. So some of the adverse events noted, 33 were reported in the trial, 1.1% in the hydrocortisone group and 0.3% in the placebo group. 6 serious adverse events, 4 in the hydrocortisone group and 2 in placebo. So limitations, only adverse events were judged by the treating clinician to be related to the trial regimen were recorded. And they did not adjudicate appropriateness of antibiotic therapy in the groups. They also did not collect data regarding all possible secondary infections. So bottom line, take home points, due to this study, a continuous infusion of hydrocortisone did not lower 90-day mortality in septic shock patients undergoing mechanical ventilation. Bottom line.
Outstanding discussion, Peter. Really thorough in terms of hitting all the highlights with respect to the study. And I'm definitely going to get everybody's opinion here on steroids. But before we do that, Rob, can you take us through the APPROACHES trial, the next big trial on steroids published just a few months ago?
Yeah, Mike. So this trial was published right after, literally the next page after the trial that Peter described. And this was a large French study by Anane and others. And the objective initially of this study was to test the hypothesis that hydrocortisone plus fludrocortisone therapy or activated protein C would improve clinical outcomes of patients with septic shock. And this was initially a 4 parallel group, 2x2 factorial design randomized trial, basically activated protein C and the other arms of hydrocortisone plus fludrocortisone versus placebo. And this was a long trial. This began in September of 2008, and it ended in June of 2015 at 34 centers, 34 ICUs predominantly in France. And to get into the trial, the inclusion criteria were patients, they had to be admitted to the ICU with septic shock of less than 24 hours duration. They had to have a SOFA score of at least 3 or 4 for at least 2 organs for at least 6 hours. And they had to have had vasopressor therapy for at least 6 hours to maintain a systolic blood pressure of at least 90 or a MAP of at least 65. And at the start of this trial, this was a randomized trial of both of those two sets of drugs, the activated protein C and the group of hydrocortisone plus fludrocortisone versus placebos. And the hydrocortisone was given in 50 milligram IV boluses every 6 hours, and the fludrocortisone was given enterally, mostly by NG tube, 50 micrograms tablets once a day. And this treatment was only for 7 days. Additionally, they measured plasma cortisol levels before 30 minutes and 60 minutes after a corticotropin stim test, which is something that we currently don't do very often. And other therapy was according to the 2008 Surviving Sepsis Campaign guidelines. Their primary outcome was 90-day all-cause mortality. And then they had a number of secondary outcomes, including all-cause mortality in the ICU and hospital at day 28 and at day 180. Another secondary outcome was the percentage of patients weaned from vasopressors at day 28 and day 90. Another outcome was time to weaning from vasopressors. Then there was percent of patients weaned from mechanical ventilation at days 28 and 90, time to weaning from mechanical ventilation and ventilator-free days. There were also some safety outcomes that included superinfection up to day 180, GI bleed up to day 28, and notably hyperglycemia up to day 7. In terms of the results, this was initially a trial that was also looking at activated protein C, but when that went off the market, interestingly, a sponsor terminated that portion of the trial at about 1,241 patients. But because of the parallel design of this study, they were able to continue and analyze the data regarding hydrocortisone plus fludrocortisone. And so the primary result was that they found significant improvement in all-cause mortality. There was 43% mortality in the hydrocortisone group versus 49.1% in the placebo group. And that was statistically significant with a relative risk ratio of death of 0.88. There were also improvements in all of the mortality, pretty much all of the other secondary outcomes as well. The ICU mortality was lower in the hydrocortisone group. That was 35.4 versus 41%. The hospital mortality was lower in the hydrocortisone group, 39 versus 45.3%. And the 180-day mortality was lower at 46.6 versus 52.5%. There was also significantly shorter times to weaning from mechanical ventilation, weaning from vasopressor therapy in the hydrocortisone group. There were more vasopressor-free days and more organ failure-free days. In terms of the serious adverse events, there were 53.1% serious adverse events in the hydrocortisone group and notably 58% in the placebo group. And that was not statistically significant. There was no difference between the two groups in terms of serious adverse events. Notably, the risk of GI bleed and superinfection was not higher in the hydrocortisone group. There were a few limitations in terms of this study. Of course, noting that the trial was originally designed to look at activated protein C as well. And there's the limitation in terms of the power calculation with that. There were slight differences in terms of the pathogens that were found in the two groups, the hydrocortisone group versus placebo group. There were slightly more viral pathogens in the hydrocortisone group noted. Of course, there's also the limitation that they were using the 2008 guidelines, which have been, of course, updated very recently. And then they did not report all of the secondary outcomes that were included in the original trial. But the bottom line on this one was, in contrast to what Peter mentioned, was that 7-day treatment of hydrocortisone plus fludrocortisone resulted in lower mortality at day 90, lower mortality across the board in terms of endpoints, as well as lower other secondary outcomes like time on the ventilator and time on vasopressors.
Rob, that was an outstanding discussion. Both you and Peter really delved into the details, the nitty-gritty of these studies, outstanding information, and different outcomes. Now, John, we've got two large studies, seemingly contrasting results. Why is there a difference between the adrenal and the approaches trial?
Well, there's a couple methodologic differences between these landmark trials. I think they both describe a fairly large, comprehensive analysis of hydrocortisone, particularly in critically ill, both medical and surgical patients. But there's some important differences, particularly in the patient populations, that make them maybe not directly comparable. So the approaches trial had a pretty significant severity of illness in terms of the patients they enrolled, and they also used oral fludrocortisone. Whereas the adrenal trial, they had a higher rate of surgical admissions, had a lower rate of renal replacement therapy, lower rates of blood infections, pulmonary infections, urinary tract infections, and that's probably more because there were more surgical diseases, I suppose, and particularly a higher rate of intra-abdominal infection. Both showed beneficial effects on secondary outcomes of shock reversal, so maybe some important process measures, including the duration of mechanical ventilation. And I have to think there's probably one other important difference, being that the Anani trial really focused on a French population, whereas the first trial that we discussed was really multinational and had a very diverse patient group. So there's a potential that there maybe are some genetic differences here, or even just between individual patients where they're located, that might have a different response to infection. So there are some pretty significant differences between the two trials.
Those are great points, John. And before I go to each of you for what you're currently doing for patients with septic shock or vasopressor refractory septic shock, let me just touch on this one article that is even hotter off the press, more recent than what we just talked about, and that's EPUB ahead of print in critical care medicine. Lead investigator author is Brian Rockwerg, and it's titled Corticosteroids in Sepsis, an Updated Systematic Review and Meta-Analysis. And in essence, in 2015, the Cochrane Review published its overall systematic review on steroids and sepsis. And with these two largest trials, they were really responding to these new potentially practice-changing articles and incorporating them into an updated systematic analysis or systematic review and meta-analysis. So they included all RCTs looking at either steroids compared to a steroid-free group in critically ill patients with sepsis. They included both adults and kids. They did not include any more recent case reports, case series, observational studies. And in essence, what they were looking at is exactly what we've looked at in these previous studies. Short-term mortality, long-term mortality, shock reversal at 7 days, organ dysfunction, both ICU, hospital length of stay, and then a lot of adverse effects such as stroke, MI, neuromuscular weakness, GI bleeding, hypernatremia, and superinfection, all those adverse events we worry about in patients receiving steroids. So In 2015, they had 30 studies. With this latest publication, they included 12 new RCTs, two of which were the Anani and the Venkatesh articles, for a total of 42. Most of them examined patients in septic shock. Very few, only three, enrolled only children, and only one study enrolled both adults and children. So this is majority of adults with septic shock. Most of the studies use hydrocortisone, and at the end of the day, hard to say if there really was a difference. In terms of short-term mortality, combining thousands of patients across these 42 trials, the relative risk was 0.93 with a confidence interval that actually spanned one. So they concluded that steroids may achieve a small or may not achieve a small reduction in short-term mortality. Same relative risk with the confidence interval touching one in terms of long-term mortality. Steroids possibly achieve a small reduction in long-term mortality. Across the board, it does appear that steroids do increase shock reversal, and they also decrease ICU and hospital length of stay, with really minimal or uncertain risk for stroke, MI, neuromuscular weakness, GI bleeding, or superinfection. They do appear to increase the incidence of hypernatremia, but that was the only real consistent finding in terms of adverse effects. So with this latest systematic review, including the Venkatesh and Anani articles, it may suggest a small reduction in mortality, but it's once again based on some moderate certainty evidence, and that confidence interval around the estimate does include no effect. It does get patients out of the ICU a little quicker, but it turns out it's probably on the order of just less than a day, and harms, with the exception of hypernatremia, seem to be minimal. So with that, gentlemen, we've reviewed the latest evidence-based RCTs and systematic review and meta-analysis on steroids in septic shock. Peter, how do you currently incorporate these studies? What are you doing in August of 2018 with respect to steroids and sepsis?
I got to say, Mike and the guys, this doesn't dramatically change what I do. So the way I view it is, if you are vasopressor dependent, and I don't mean a little small piddling dose of vasopressor, but if you're on moderate dosages of Levofed and I'm adding something else to kind of stabilize your blood pressure, I'm thinking about giving you hydrocortisone 200 milligrams over 24 hours and continuing that. And the way I come to grips with this is, I think that there's a relative adrenal insufficiency, not absolute, but relative. And I think your adrenals are squeezing out every last bit that they can of steroid. And this is just stress dose steroid dosages that I give to my patients. And that's how I play the game.
I like those points, Peter. Rob, what about you?
I echo Peter's practice. I'm pretty much identical in terms of my threshold for starting hydrocortisone. When I'm reaching for a second pressor in septic shock, I'm also pretty much reflexively giving hydrocortisone. I sort of pair that with my vasopressin if I'm adding that on board. So I use the same threshold, and I'm pretty liberal about that. My view is that there's not a lot we can do for sepsis besides give antibiotics, use low tidal volume ventilation, and keep the head of bed elevated. There's pretty clearly no harm with this, and there's potential benefit. It's additionally very cheap. So my view is that I'm all in terms of that. I'd say the one thing that this series of articles, the one way it's going to change my practice, I haven't done it yet, but I'm going to start adding the fludrocortisone by NG tube. There's been a lot of signal that that addition may be a benefit. And again, there's really no side effect with that, except perhaps that hypernatremia. And so I'm probably going to start adding that simple measure as well.
Very interesting, Rob. Let me just ask for our listeners who are practicing, many are in different emergency departments, community versus academic. Is your addition of fludrocortisone really once they get upstairs to the ICU, or is it something that should be considered in the ED?
You know, if they're going to be down there in the ED for any period of time, I would just do it. They move pretty quickly from my ER to the ICU, and so I wouldn't have a chance to add that on. But I would give that within a few hours or within an hour of the time that I'm giving the hydrocortisone.
Great points. And John, bring us home here. Your thoughts.
Well, I hate to disappoint, Mike, but I kind of fall in line with everyone. I think at the patient level, I think that these two trials clarify one thing, and that's that steroids don't appear to have an impact on mortality. I think there's a lot we still don't understand about sepsis, and in particular, where steroids lie. I think that it probably does impact as an adjunctive therapy. So I also will continue to add on with increasing levels of catecholamines as a primary vasopressor. Usually for me, it's that 0.1 mics per kilo. Usually that ends up being somewhere around 10 mics a minute of norepinephrine as I'm adding on a second vasopressor agent. But I do believe that some of these secondary outcomes, particularly getting out of the ICU quicker and resolution of shock, are important. So I do think there's a role for steroids still. But from a guidelines perspective, my hope is that it will continue to be recommended more as a consideration rather than a mandated therapy. And I think that these two trials will support that weak evidence for the use of steroids in septic shock.
Nicely said, John. I think that's a very nice way to kind of bring things together. I can't disagree, or I won't offer a disagreeing opinion or clinical practice. Certainly, I think all four of us are very similar in how we're approaching patients when we're administering corticosteroids. And I've heard this echoed in a lot of social media sites and articles written based on these two latest RCTs, that it does tend to favor perhaps more administration given the fact that certainly there is quicker shock resolution, shorter ICU length of stay. And while there is no strong signal of mortality benefit, as Rob, you indicated, there the adverse effects, the serious adverse effects appear to be minimal at best. So in terms of the risk benefit providing them, even if there does turn out to be a small benefit at the end of the day, it is likely going to favor patients in the long run. So I'm very much adding steroids using hydrocortisone, probably bolus dose, when I'm considering the second vasopressor in patients as I'm titrating up norepinephrine and considering the addition of most often vasopressin. I'm still using corticosteroids. Well, gentlemen, that's going to bring us to a close here. We are right on time in terms of our podcast. If any of you have any questions on these articles or anything pertaining to steroids and sepsis, please shoot us an email through our website. Recall that we have a new website over the past several months. It is www.criticalcareinem.com. You'll see all of the podcasts listed. A number of them are on the free homepage for you to listen to, as well as the members only site with all of our historical podcast dating back for a few years. My thanks, Peter, Rob, John, for an outstanding discussion on the latest evidence regarding steroids and septic shock. Looking forward to our next discussion. And once again, this is Mike Winters from the University of Maryland School of Medicine in Baltimore for Critical Care Perspectives in Emergency Medicine. We will talk to you on our next podcast. Bye for now.